In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Welcome back, everybody, to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. And Sarah, I feel very popular because we've been having some fun guests lately. But I have to say, I think we have the most charming one on deck because there's nothing more chic than someone asking, can I drink tea throughout the interview? I love that.
That
and
is
I feel
so true.
The accent goes with it. Sarah, let everybody know who we're joined with right now.
We are joined by the New York Times bestselling author, Pulitzer finalist, host of the podcast, Crypto Kingpins, and most importantly, he is British. Tom Wright, everybody.
If my mum is listening to this, she's going to have a good old laugh because I've lived outside of Britain for like almost 30 years and never drink tea. But I just happen to be drinking tea right now.
Does it make you feel like home, or are you just like, I've been talking so much, I just need something?
I just got a sore throat and I'm drinking chamomile tea, yeah. It's also like 10 o'clock at night here in Singapore where I live, so.
Yes, how long have you lived in Singapore for?
I've been here for 2.5 years, but I've been living in Asia since the 1990s. So I was with the Wall Street Journal for many years as a foreign correspondent and then moved around a bunch of countries in Asia. And yeah, that's how I ended up like a circuitous route. But I wrote a book called Billion Dollar Whale. About the 1MDB scandal, which people may know. That's where this fraudster Jolo ended up becoming pals with Leonardo DiCaprio and funding the Wolf of Wall Street. And then, yeah, set up a company called Project Brazen a couple of years out here in Asia with my pal and co-founder Bradley Hope. And we do podcasts and books and things for adaptation. And the latest one is Crypto Kingpins.
Sounds such like a fun, crazy life of you like going down so many wormholes of insanity. Like, is it a kind of, before we get into Crypto Kingpins and everything, but it was this kind of like when you were growing up, were you like, I want to travel and also uncover like batshit things? Because like you're doing a very good job at mixing those two together, I feel.
Yeah, well, I watched a movie when I was a kid called The Killing Fields about Cambodia and about a New York Times journalist. So that's, I think I must have been in like middle school when I watched that, and it just got me into the thinking about being a journalist. I did want to be one very young, and yeah, I've had quite an interesting career and lucky enough to do what I love, I guess. And yeah, there have been some crazy stories. We put out our first podcast at Project Brazen was Fat Leonard, which is about a guy who totally corrupted the US Navy, arranged orgies for admirals in return for big contracts. So that was the first podcast we did. So we do seem to tend to do a lot of things that involve white collar crime, malfeasance, that kind of stuff. You know, banking fraud, international spy stuff. We had a story came out just a couple weeks ago called Spy Valley about spying in Silicon Valley. So that's the kind of material we work in.
That's what I was going to ask. How / why were you interested in this crypto story? But that fits this to a T.
Well, the crypto story, so, I mean, you guys know, like, if you're going to do a story, you have to have an edge. There's all kinds of people trying to do stories, right? And one thing journalism teaches you is how to get the edge. You know, either you break news or you come at it at an angle that other people don't have. So the crypto story, so Sam Bankman-Fried is going on trial next week in the Southern District of New York. For your audience who don't know who he is, he, huge crypto fraudster, alleged fraudster. he was the founder of FTX, and prosecutors claim that they created a backdoor on this big exchange for trading crypto. So mom and pops, professional traders were on there trading crypto, buying and selling crypto, and they allegedly took customer money and used it to do all kinds of crazy things, including getting the naming rights for the Miami Heat Stadium and turning that into FTX. I was joking with my wife. My wife's a big Formula One fan, and she last year at the Singapore Grand Prix bought the Mercedes hat, which had the big FTX logo on it. And then she subsequently tried to rub it off with, alcohol to get rid of the FTX logo when they were founded before. But anyway, not my wife's fault. They were mainstream, you know? And, they had Tom Brady doing brand ambassador, Giselle, Larry David in a Super Bowl ad. You know, they were mainstream, but it turns out he was a fraudster. So sorry to go back to your question about you need an edge. And so my edge was here in Singapore, a lot of crypto people landed here in the last few years because it was quite crypto friendly a few years ago, and they were hoping to get licenses. And one of the guys who landed here was a guy worth hundreds of, at least tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars. He's the biggest crypto figure in the world. He's called Changpeng Zhao. He's a Canadian guy of Chinese origin. And he was Sam Bankman-Fried's original investor and mentor, and then later nemesis. And so that I got to know him here in Singapore, and that's how Crypto Kingpins came about.
Well, that's what I kind of was, obviously, I feel... For a lot of people, understanding the concept, and maybe it's because what is cryptocurrency? Understanding the concept of it makes me go like, did I just read a sentence? Like, I get so confused. But what hooked me into your podcast so quickly that I was like, oh, this is on the basis of like pettiness. Because it kind of starts where you're with CZ, as you refer to him in the podcast too, where it's like they were friends turned enemies. And then I was like, oh, there's so much backstory and drama to this. So I love that angle because I feel it's almost, maybe you experienced this while like even before diving into it. What was your thoughts on cryptocurrency when it just started to exist? Like, were you always kind of like, what's happening here? Or did you see some of like the levels of it?
Well, Danny, you made me very happy with that comment. I mean, like, we tried to not mention blockchain or Web3 or or I don't know, NFT once in the whole podcast. So yeah. I'm glad you said that. This is really for a general audience, but we do explain like what is crypto, why does it exist, yeah. And why has it become so mainstream, and why did so many people get arrested in the last few months, including Sam Bankman-Fried? I mean, journalists are naturally skeptical of everything, right? If I hear someone say they're giving money to charity, I'm like, okay, what did they do wrong? That's my starting position. So maybe don't ask me whether I was skeptical. I was definitely skeptical. But I've become more skeptical. My friend Zeke Fox at Bloomberg has just written a fantastic book called Number Go Up about this. And if you want to really understand the absolute insanity of this world, you can buy Number Go Up and read that, because it's just that nobody can really find a proper real world example of how you can use a lot of this stuff, right? You can't pay for things in it. It's 0.02% of global financial assets, so very small. But some people like Sam Bankman-Fried and CZ and others have become insanely wealthy doing it. And so, you know, my thought was going into it is that, look, this is probably like an unregulated casino, because a lot of this stuff was happening in Hong Kong and, you know, the Seychelles and various places weren't regulated. So the big battle that you're seeing now is, you know, the US regulators want to get a handle on it, because a lot of the people trading in crypto overseas on these big exchanges are Americans, and they were using all kinds of ways to trade outside of the US on these things, on these exchanges. And they want to get a handle on that and bring it all under US regulations, which, you know, obviously you can't, this in the US, you can't do what you want when you want to sell stocks on the New York Stock Exchange, right? The mom and pop investors have to be protected.
And I was so interested too, like reading just like kind of to get the whole framing of Sam too. A lot of people said he started out touting himself kind of as like the good boy of crypto. Can you kind of go into explain to the audience like what that persona entailed and how that kind of benefited his like massive rise?
Yeah, well, we should quickly zoom out, I guess, and say that crypto, you know, Bitcoin was invented, whatever it is, 15 years ago now, by somebody, we don't know who, a digital currency, no banks involved. We don't have to get into what it is, but basically it's a digital currency. And Sam Bankman-Fried comes along a lot later. You know, he doesn't set up FTX until 2019 in Hong Kong. And, you know, he's the son of Stanford professors. He's a math whiz, you know, he'd been an engineering student at MIT, very smart guy. And he learned the business at a company called Jane Street, which is a Wall Street high frequency trading firm. You know, this is like buying and selling in fractions of seconds to make money off differences in prices. So he learned that whole how to gamble. He quits Jane Street and he has this whole philosophy about, oh, I'm gonna give away all my money to charity as part of this effective altruism movement. So that's ostensibly what he says he wants to do, make a lot of money in crypto by leaving Jane Street to give it away to charity. And he is inspired by CZ, who had set up his exchange, Binance, a few years earlier and had become insanely wealthy. He set it up at just the right time. you know, we a couple of years ago when I first met CZ here in Singapore, CZ was telling people that he was worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, because not only did they take a cut of every single transaction on their exchange every time someone bought or sold crypto, they also issued their own cryptocurrencies. There's no central banks involved, right? So people were able to issue their own currencies, and people
that's like not insane.
People bought into it.
I remember the Squid Game coin that was just like so clearly a pump and dump scheme right away.
Yeah. Well, this Dogecoin, you know, named after a dog.
Oh, Dogecoin. You know.
So you know, there's a great bit of tape. Sorry, going off your question here, but there was a great bit of tape of Matt Levine of Bloomberg talking to Sam, where he admits, you know, he says, yeah, it's just like a box where it's just a normal box where people think the box is cool. They put a bit of money in. Suddenly the box has got $10,000. Oh, now it's got $10 million. And then the next day people move on to the next cool box. And that's the analogy he uses to describe his business. And Matt Levine goes, you've just described a Ponzi scheme. You know, there's no intrinsic value to this. It's just the new money pays off the old investors, which is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. So anyway, Sam gets to know CZ because Sam sets up a company called Alameda, which is like a kind of a trading firm for crypto. And he trades on CZ's exchange. And CZ is the kingpin of crypto at that time. We're only talking about 2019, by the way, 18, you know, not long ago. All this stuff's happened in just a few years. And then Sam is a VIP trader on CZ's exchange. And we have this scene in the podcast where he invites CZ to this aquarium in Singapore to get to know him. And he starts to get to know him. And CZ basically eventually invests in Sam's company, in FTX, a rival exchange. And it all goes swell for a while. Everyone's making big money, apart from the mom and pop investors and the suckers who lose money. But anyway, and then Sam gets too big for his britches. FTX starts to take off. Sam wants to be the big player in America. And don't forget, Sam's been taking money from his own customers to expand, right, illegally. Yeah, so what happens is he turns on CZ and he starts to go to the U.S. Congress people and to the U.S. media and say, this guy's a Chinese spy. He's not a U.S. national. He's Chinese Canadian, but he paints him as a Chinese spy. He says he's not to be trusted. He's laundering money on his exchange. And the whole purpose was to kind of rubbish Binance's name, Binance's name. And then his company, FTX, would be the winner. So that's what happened.
And I feel he was kind of doing that while at the same time being like, that guy's crazy. Gisele Bündchen loves me. So America, let's get into this. Like, how are you kind of shocked how, I don't know if easily is the right term, but like quickly so many celebrities went to back him and like crypto as a thing? You're already shaking your head. No.
I co-wrote a book with Bradley Hope called Billion Dollar Whale, which was like you said, a pretty good selling book. It's still selling well now. It's from 2018.
Being so modest, you guys.
It's a bestseller. It's a pretty good selling book. Yes.
But it's getting made into a TV show right now with Bo Willimon, who did House of Cards. It's going to be fantastic. David Henry Huang.
That's awesome.
We learned from that book that the stars are always for sale. This guy Jolo, you know, stole over $6 billion from a Malaysian state fund. And he just went on the rampage and, you know, paying for Paris Hilton to party with him and paying for all of Leonardo DiCaprio and Scorsese's movies and offering them $400 million to make four movies. Actually made The Wolf of Wall Street with his stolen money. Paid Swizz Beatz, Alicia Keys' husband, a lot of money to turn up at events and MC things. Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx would get a ton of money just to turn up and play piano or something.
This guy sounds like Billy McFarland's inspiration. Yeah. We need to do a deep dive on him later.
who's Billy McFarland?
Oh, the Fyre Festival guy.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, well, everything's for sale, basically. And people don't scratch too deep, right, when the dollar signs are in their eyes. And so what the FT had a great story about FTX. They went to Endeavor, basically. They went to them and they said, get a load of celebrities and here's some records of our finances and we'll give everyone equity. So Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen got equity in FTX and he showed them fake numbers. I think he showed them we made $800 million last year. So it looked like a huge amount of money in equity they'd be getting. And, you know, they went out and spoke for the company. Without knowing too much about it. But, you know, you could say they were duped. They didn't get to see the proper financials. But people want to believe a good story, right? And Sam was this, you know, if you've seen Sam, he's always wearing cargo shorts and a t-shirt and crazy hair and he's tapping his leg away. and he comes across as a sort of like as a genius, right?
Mm-hmm.
But having listened to lots of archival tape of him talking over the last 6 months for this podcast, I mean, I'm like, I'm sick of the guy. You know, he's he really just, you know, I mean, he admits, it's crazy. He admits on tape, you know, not, this is not post-arrest. This is before, like, he says things like, yeah, we called our original trading firm Alameda Research because we wanted to make it sound like a research company, not a crypto company, because otherwise we wouldn't have gotten bank accounts. He says things like that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So this is either a really dumb question or a smart question, but I will throw myself on the sword for this. If you're making a crypto exchange slash company, aside from customers' money, how else do you grow? Is it just venture capital? Like how, that's what I'm kind of.
Oh yeah. Well, yes, they got a lot of venture capital, including, I'll tell you in a second, okay, from some of the biggest venture capital. They raised, you know, $2 billion at a $38 million valuation. So it's crazy. That's for a company that only started in 2019. But what he initially did was, when he was based in Hong Kong, don't forget he went to Hong Kong because the regulators weren't doing very much in Hong Kong, so it was free and easy, was a coding job. They set up an exchange. An exchange has to work. It has to be able to process trades in microseconds and has to offer all kinds of products. And one of the things they offered was the ability to take huge bets. So for example, you could bet at 100 times, which means you could only put, say if you wanted to buy a house, you wanted to buy a $100,000 house and you only put down $1,000 deposit. That's the kind of bets you're allowed to make on the FTX exchange. And so there's this term in crypto, degen, you know, degenerate gamblers. And they attracted a lot of those guys. And those were like professional traders. And the big myth about crypto is, might have heard this, it's like, oh, this is a democratization of finance. We're taping, you hear this a lot from especially right-wing people, we're taking the power away from the central banks, we're inflating away our savings and all of this. And that we're, you know, this is inflation-proof because you can't print more of it, et cetera, et cetera. You can mine it. I mean, to me, that's all bullshit because all the people running crypto came out of traditional finance. I mean, Wall Street jobs. So like there's this guy, Arthur Hayes, who was a billionaire who got arrested in Hong Kong, who was a bit of a model for Sam, you know, these were guys who worked for, he worked for Citibank as a trader. They didn't come out of some, you know, totally different place. And what they loved about crypto was there was no rules. So that's what they initially did. And then when they started to make a lot of money by taking a bit of every, they had millions of users, right? So everyone wants to get rich. It's a gold rush mentality. These guys are at the center of it. Then they started to attract all the venture capitalists to invest in the business. And Sam talked a big game. He was talking about creating an app that would be all your finance needs. You know, there's this famous scene where he's trying to get $200 million from Sequoia Capital, a huge, you know, US venture fund. And he's playing League of Legends at the same time from his Hong Kong office while he's negotiating with them. And on their side of the chat, they're saying things like, oh, I love this founder, 10 out of 10. It's a yes from me, because they're looking for visionary people to put their money with. And there aren't that many visionary people out there, because you have to be slightly sociopathic to be that visionary, right?
Yeah. So. My God. I mean, I don't pay attention in Zoom meetings, but that is a different level, I feel.
Adam Newman, right? The WeWork debacle. Mm. We've all seen the TV show or read the book, whatever. Why is Marc Andreessen investing tons more money into Adam Newman even after WeWork? You know, now he's moved from office to doing residential. It's because these kind of founders think on such a big scale. And Sam was one of those people. You know, he was on that call saying, I'm going to change the face of money. You're going to be able to buy a banana on my app. You know, you're going to be able to trade crypto and buy a banana and do everything. And they're going, oh, wow, we've got the next Mark Zuckerberg here. And that's how the fraud
but
works.
But how do we get from like A to B to C? And they're like, no, don't worry about
where's
it.
Where's my banana
and like,
coming
okay,
from?
Okay, and throw money at it.
It's amazing. When they apologized, Sequoia apologized to investors, to their limited partners, they're like, we'll do better due diligence next time. You know, so, you know, Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, you know, who was Trump's So he's in the podcast. He was an investor in Sam actually bought a stake in his financial company. And Scaramucci told me, well, you know, we were all lied to. We saw financials that showed that this company was making, you know, $800 million a month. You know, these were the user growth. This was the financials. I mean, if you have enough chutzpah, you can get away with it.
And Photoshop is easy to use.
I like how the Mooch is like, I'm used to lying, but when I got to do it, now this is not okay for me, okay? But it is so funny that it is kind of just like so much of business. And when me and Sarah look at scams and stuff like that, so much of it is just like walking the walk and talking the talk of your own bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then everybody just follows with it. It is kind of, it's crazy. Even when you talk about so much money that gets involved and lost and thrown around all of it, people aren't really asking too many follow-up questions if you just get like wooed at the intro conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people, there's also this, you know, fear of missing out, which I think is huge in the investing world. You know, if somebody's, and you know, there's studies that intelligence helps you to get above $60,000 a year salary. And after that, you know, the billionaires are not any more intelligent than anyone else. It's not.
I believe that. Yeah.
It's just the ability to believe you belong and to sell the wares, you know? And Sam was, if you listen to Sam, he talks in a way, there's no doubt in his mind of what he's saying, you know?
So, and kind of with it, because like you said, the trial is upcoming. How do you think all of that is going to go for someone with his confidence or delusion or whatever that may be?
Well, he's had a rocky run into the trial. So the trial starts, I think, October the 3rd in the Southern District of New York, which is obviously the famous place for white collar crimes to be tried as a jury trial. But he leaked his girlfriend. So the great thing in the podcast is in the last couple of episodes, we show very clearly what his end game was. And it was to throw his one-time girlfriend, who was also a member of his company and a senior executive of his company, under the bus, and to paint her as a jilted lover, and that she did a lot of things. It's complicated, but you know, that they took this money off the exchange and they used it to do everything with this hedge fund they owned. And she ran the hedge fund.
Fragile masculinity is the ultimate. I don't know if that's a scam or just the crime of life. Yes.
Yeah. Well, he put her very late in the day. He put her in charge of co-head of this one entity. And then he said, well, I'm not really sure what's going on there. And, you know, he went around on the Deal Book conference with Andrew Ross Sorkin and various places saying, well, I'm not really sure that I knew what was going on there. But he was never sort of brave enough to name Caroline Ellison, who was the, you know, his former girlfriend. And then what obviously happened was, if you treat someone like that, they're going to turn on you in 5 seconds when everyone gets arrested. Mm-hmm. And Caroline turned state witness, and so did the co-founder and a guy called Gary Wang and another guy called Nishad Singh. They're all given evidence, and they'll be, you know, star prosecutorial witnesses in the trial. And then Sam was put into jail. He was in house arrest at his parents' house on the Stanford campus, Stanford professor parents. And that was taken away by the judge because Sam leaked Caroline's diaries to the New York Times just a few weeks ago.
Oh, Lord.
And so that was, and the prosecutor said, well, that's an attempt to paint her as a jilted lover. So that seems to be one, at least one plank of his defense that we know about so far.
We've seen a lot of crypto things fall. Do you think any crypto is safe?
So, you know, my friend Zeke Fox, who wrote Number Go Up, he started out that book investigating Tether. So Tether is this stable coin. And a stable coin is a way, banks don't want to deal with crypto firms. So Tether is a way for you to move dollars into Tether and then into crypto, you know, Bitcoin or whatever. And it's supposed to be one-to-one with the dollar. So it's this way. They got in trouble with the New York state attorney, and Zeke didn't really believe that they had the backing, you know, enough dollars to back what they, their Tethers. So he went into it, investigated it. And Tether is a crazy. It was founded by a former Italian plastic surgeon and a former child actor from the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah. They have all my money. They have all my money.
Kept getting crazier, by the way.
Yeah, well, I haven't finished either because they bank in the Caribbean with a bank owned by a guy who invented Inspector Gadget, the cartoon. So
wait,
do your next podcast on this, please.
No, like, you have to read. No, you have to. I'm shilling for my friend here. You have to read Number Go Up because it's just full of stuff like this.
Wait,
so
I'm gonna read that, and I also need to go. Unfortunately, I don't know if they're good or bad because I haven't finished the book yet. I need to go to brunch with all of them because I have so many questions about how they met and what is going on, and like if you get discounts on Botox if you tether up. I don't know.
Well, these guys all got in very early is the answer, you know. Like a lot of it came out of gaming and they were all there.
Mighty Ducks always get in early.
They were all there, yeah. If you bought, you know, original Bitcoin 2008, just one Bitcoin, you wouldn't have to work again, you know. So yeah, so there's that. Anyway, so the answer to that is Tether is still doing very well. They paid a fine to in some kind of deal with the New York state attorney, and they're still making profits and doing well. So his book actually sort of goes off that and into other weird parts of crypto. So that's fine. And Bitcoin is still an asset that people use. People say there's lots of uses for the blockchain still. I mean, so crypto's not going away. But as I said earlier, it's only 0.2% under a recent analysis of the global financial system. So that's tiny. It's not really a systemic risk to the financial system, you know. But yeah, like so many things have gone belly up. A big bank called Celsius, the founder was arrested recently. A couple of guys from this company called Three Arrows who lived in Singapore, and they were about to buy this huge yacht called Much Wow before all of the shit hit the fan. They're sort of like they're in trouble, and they don't go back to the States now. Everyone's either been arrested or is on the run, or one guy was picked up in Montenegro recently.
Well, we did one podcast on the Canadian crypto guy who maybe died, maybe
or
faked his death.
Yeah,
there is actually a great podcast about that as well. I listened to that. I can't remember the name of it, but that's a fantastic narrative podcast. Yeah,
yeah. There was a good Netflix documentary about it.
He just appears on the Zoom screen right now. We're like, oh, this is it.
Knock on the door.
So I tried to be sort of, you know, as open minded as possible. Not a crypto expert, but I tried to be as open minded as possible about it. But I agree with Zeke, which is, you know, seems to be the main case for all of this seems to be to gamble in an unregulated way offshore. It's not easy to make a transaction. I mean, Zeke in his book tries to pay for something overseas at one point using cryptocurrency, and that's almost impossible as well at the moment.
And are there any new things that have come out, or like from diving so much into crypto and everything that you've been looking at? You're just kind of like, oh, everyone's kind of jumping on that bandwagon, but it's given me a little pause. I mean, like you said, everything gives you pause as a journalist. But is there anything that you're like, because I feel what we all see is nothing ever will like go away. There's never going to be everyone's like, oh, we're stopped doing like reckless gambling now. There's always some five things to take the place of that. Do you feel more things are popping up now in that regard?
I just think that these kind of frauds will never go away, right? I mean, because people are inherently lazy. I mean, we all work far too hard these days, right? We've taken blue collar factory work from the 19th century and put it onto white collar jobs, and everyone's sick of it. And people are sort of chomping at the bit to get away from that, and work from home is part of that, right? And so I think with that, this is my personal view, no evidence for this, but with that as the context, then frauds are, these kind of easy money things are, you can stick it to the man, you can leave your job, you can, and Bitcoin was hugely popular because of that, right? It came up at a time of, you know, people just had had enough of these lives, these long commutes, and this, you know, we're all supposedly richer, but we're all living these tough lives, and this was easy money. And a lot of people got very, very rich. You know, I went to this party in Singapore where this guy, Arthur Hayes, had bought out the whole bar. But he wasn't there because he was wearing an ankle bracelet in Miami, where he'd been arrested and was doing probation for crimes of his at his crypto exchange. But all the people people didn't care, and all the people in the party were still very happy with him and with how much money they'd made from being early into crypto.
You can never be that mad at someone who's throwing an open bar party that you don't have to make small talk with. You're like, I can drink on his dime and not have to be like, thank you. I guess that is insane.
I paid for my drink of that, by the way.
You're like, I'm not.
It was actually at my club, so like, I got a tab there. So I was like, I'm paying for my drink.
Ooh, what's the club? That's fun. Okay, no, yeah, you're like, you know, that
it's
is
giving catch
off the record.
Yeah.
I love it.
Very ethical.
And I love it too that I'm sure it was not coincidental, but planned out that this is also, all these episodes are coming out as the trial is about to go underway, and so much on it. So I know our listeners are going to be very excited to like listen to you talking about it while getting all the updates. Is there any, I mean, I don't know if you are in the gambling mindset in regards to this. Do you have any ideas of what the outcome could be? Or do you feel it's all just still, we don't, I know we've already been saying Sam has not been painting himself to come out on top.
He's pleaded not guilty to all 7 charges that he's facing.
Of course.
And
why would he not?
Well, I mean, some cases pleading not guilty is a much, much smarter thing to do with a white collar crime. Because, you know, sentences can be reduced. You know, we saw that in one with the 1MDB scandal. You know, Goldman Sachs was involved, and one of the bankers pleaded not guilty, this managing director, and he's, you know, he got given, I think, 10 years in jail. So it's quite long, quite a lot for a white collar. Initially, I think he was facing 20-something charges. They only are trying him for 7, and those 20-something charges had a cumulative potential sentence of over 150 years. But he's not going to do anything like that, because, you know, typically these white collar crimes, you know, you do 5-10 years. I don't know. I mean, Michael Milken is now running a Milken conferences around the world, and he was, you know, he went to jail for bond fraud in the 80s. So
I was going to say, usually it's a slap on the wrist, and then they come out and just get back on the horse. Yeah. they're like, they just basically, it's
Fire
almost
Festival
like
two is already happening. So
they network in prison because it's just them with all the other white collar people, and they're like, oh wait, do you guys want to get coffee at Panera Bread when we're all out and launch something new? Yeah. Like, it is insane. Yeah.
You know, you can read Black Edge about Steve Cohen. You can, there's plenty of books that show how people can, well, sorry, we should say Steve Cohen was never charged with anything. But, you know, there's plenty of ways to get back on the horse, as you put it. Yeah. And that seems to be more common than not.
And I mean, that is why the only silver lining of any of that means that we will probably be able to listen to Tom Wright podcasts about all of them and the new stuff they do for decades to come.
Yeah, although I'm getting pretty wrung out doing it. I don't know. The template's pretty much the same every time, you know. A lot of people made a lot of money as well, right? There's a lot of people who got in and out, you know. So there's, you know, didn't work well for Sam, you know, he's in jail, or his, you know, co-conspirators who've pleaded guilty. But, you know, there are plenty of people who invested in this thing early. I went to this wedding in Singapore earlier this year, where, you know, beautiful wedding in this house where I'd met CZ actually back in the day. Everyone there had been involved in crypto, and one guy I got talking to had basically invested $2 million into Sam's FTX when it was first set up in Hong Kong, like when he was in a co-working space still. And that $2 million 2 years later was worth $1 billion. 50,000% return on investment.
I don't even.
Whoa.
Okay. Wow. Now, if that is that is a good lesson to leave the party early if you're ever curious, because yeah. It works out. You get a good night's sleep and $1 billion. Okay.
And he got it out into this guy got it out into real dollars, you know, and now he's a property magnate buying up real estate in London and elsewhere. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, there are people who there are these huge fortunes that got made, you know, generational fortunes This is like, you know, it reminds me of like, if you go, I mean, I'm from England, and you go around the National Trust properties there, which are the, you know, obviously the charity we have that runs all the big stately homes that tourists go and see, right? And mm-hmm. if you actually get the little pamphlets there, half the time it's like, this guy was involved in, you know, the East India cotton trade or the Jamaican, you know, slave trade or whatever it was. And that's how they that's how they made their money, that those big houses back then in the 1700s and 1800s. And, you know, we're going to be seeing this this wave, this, what is it, 15 years of crypto boom, generational wealth.
Wow.
Yeah. People made a lot of money. And then, you know, you hear all the stories of the people who lost their shirts, right? The unsophisticated folk who came in too late and thought they'd do the same.
Yeah, that is the two extremes that it seems to be surrounding crypto fully. Because I even remember from that documentary too, where it was like, people were like, well, I had three apartments, now I have none because I don't know where any of the money in my bank account is. Oh, you're like,
I lost the key.
I feel like by the time those opportunities reach us normal people, it's too late. That's the lesson that I take from all of this stuff.
I don't know you very well, Sarah, but I think you're probably not the kind of person going around in your life looking for the opportunity. You know, I think that's
certainly
the thing.
Not.
You know, I think there are a lot of people who are like, what is the next big thing and how do I get in on it early? And that's how I'm going to become extremely wealthy. And you're thinking about the podcast you're going to create. You know, the bit of content you're going to create. So that's
meanwhile,
a different...
Meanwhile, I'm like, how do I ask for a day off of work?
Or like, should I have a third iced coffee today? The answer is always yes.
No, but I worked for years for, you know, decent salary, but like a pretty, you know, not getting rich salary. And I wasn't motivated by trying to find out. One of my friends actually told me about Bitcoin very early on. And I think he even bought a Bitcoin in my name and I lost the key. I'm just not motivated by it. It's not interesting to me. And for a lot of people, I don't think it is interesting. But for other people, it is interesting. And either you got in early enough and you made a lot of money or you didn't, you know. I should just mention, though, that so CZ, Changpeng Zhao, he's like the last crypto kingpin left standing, you know. So obviously Sam gets arrested and his business is still worth a lot of money. But then at the end of the podcast, at the end of Crypto Kingpins, he gets in trouble too. And it's not, you know, Sam has been bad-mouthing him, as I say, you know, he's calling him a Chinese spy and, you know, getting him into trouble with media and all of this stuff. But then after Sam is jailed in December last year when he's extradited from the Bahamas, where he was living in this crazy complex, CZ also starts to get into trouble. So he's facing a bunch of charges by the SEC, but those are civil charges, not criminal charges. So he doesn't have any criminal charges against him yet. And so just as I was talking to him, and I, you know, still talking to him today, he's facing a world of pain of his own now. And he's fighting that. And they say, well, look, he's saying, don't confuse me with Sam. I didn't steal my customer money. But the US regulators are going after him saying, you know, you sold to Americans. You're not allowed to do that. You know, you went around our rules, all this kind of stuff. So we also have to see how all of that plays out. So it's not finished yet. Yeah, by a long shot.
Oh, my God. Not at all. Okay, I feel like that's already the sequel is already forming itself.
Yeah, well, we always try to do podcasts where there's like you keep the momentum going and the interest in it. So Fat Leonard, for example. So Fat Leonard was this guy who he was a huge procurer of things for the US Navy, you know, fuel and all that kind of, a bit like Eric Prince, you know, like a contractor for the military. And he basically overbuilt to the tune of millions and millions of dollars and would put on, you know, orgies for admirals, as I said earlier. And he ended up getting arrested. And we smuggled a microphone to him, like the one we're talking on here. And he was in home arrest in San Diego, recorded hours for the podcast, did the podcast. And then after the podcast came out, he escaped from home arrest, cut off his ankle bracelet, went over the border into Mexico and went on the run. And then he was rearrested trying to escape to Russia from Venezuela, where he's now in jail. When stories are still ongoing and you do a podcast about them, like a narrative podcast, it gets a lot more interest in it.
That is wild. Yes. And we will be listening and keeping our eyes and ears peeled for some more Crypto Kingpins episodes.
Also, to see where Sam winds up, because now I'm like, oh, I just thought he's going to go to trial in the city. Cut to he's going to be running away, going all across like multiple different countries, if it's anything like all your other characters.
He's in the Brooklyn Detention Center, so it's a lot more difficult. Fat Leonard was called Leonard Francis. He was in his big rented mansion in San Diego. So, I still don't understand how he escaped, though.
That is why these characters, the best characters are the ones that are not written, but just exist into the world.
Yeah. Well, if I can plug our company, if you want to listen to any of these stories, you can go on brazen.fm. Brazen.fm and all of our podcasts are there. We have a show came out a few weeks ago called Spy Valley, which is a story about spying in Silicon Valley in the Cold War. We got a show called Corinna and the King, which is where my partner Bradley talked for months to Corinna, who's this woman who had an affair with the King of Spain, which led to the abdication of the King. So we do these stories with Edge, basically.
Salacious drama that I live for. Yes. And so, okay, so everyone's going to be checking out brazen.fm and also Crypto Kingpins. There's a few episodes left to drop at time of this coming out. So we cannot wait for that. And thank you so much for taking the time to educate our audience and also us on crypto and beyond, Tom.
Thanks, Danny. And thanks, Sarah. And we'll be covering the trial too with bonus episodes of Crypto
Amazing.
Kingpins.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so we will be listening to that because we're going to need your help to understand it. Enjoy the tea.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So make sure you guys listen to Crypto Kingpins. It's great. Honestly, I think I'm going to just put it on while I try to fall asleep because Tom's voice is so comforting.
Oh.
To be honest.
Comfort. It makes me very happy that I'm going to London in 2 weeks.
I love that for you.
I'm very excited. I'm going to have some chamomile tea.
I was going to say, Danny, where can people follow your travels?
Ooh. Follow along at Cashmere Danny, Cashmere with a K.
Love that for you. You can follow me, as always, at Sarah Lameme. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales-Pico, Sean Kilby, and Rebecca Sosmacat. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at Not Another True Crime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send all of your emails to natc@betches.com.
Betches.